I can do that, and I've already worked with Roberto on a very close basis, so there's no problem there.
Can we get some kind of report on that?
Sure.
Next task force here?
Sure.
On the second part about making a statement going on record as requesting legislators to earmark a portion of this for migrants, what's your pleasure on this? Should we write one letter out of here or a letter out of here plus yes, maybe sir. Everybody else sending a letter out?
The thought is to have the one letter formally as part of the resolution.
Yes.
And the third part is more of a plea individually for people to do that.
Why don't you make an informal motion, Jay, if you would, please.
I move that the first two parts of Brian's motion prevail, and the other part of what I was saying was just a gentleman's agreement kind of thing. Person kind of.
Okay, for the minute's sake, I'm not too sure if the secretary has your motion, I guess, Jay, so.
What I suggested is that, number one, we continue to track that legislation. Secondly, what we should do is to impact or write letters to our congressional representatives, as well as Community Services Administration, making certain that a portion of those dollar amounts are earmarked specifically for community food and nutrition for migrant programs.
Okay, do we get a second on this?
Second.
Any discussion on the motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries and so ordered. Thank you. Dr. Fire.
Chairman, just to piggyback on that, I think that as an example, just what she was just addressing, just this week I found out there's some legislation, House File 1617, which we heard by word of mouth on migrant insurance. it's that kind of problem. You know, we've emphasized the cooperation, let us know what's happening, so we're there. When I found out about that bill being heard, we were in the staff meeting of the commissioner, and all of a sudden the meeting was going on in the house, and we were there, and then, you know, that kind of hazard. And I think it's going to be good to kind of strategize, work together, because the various bills that have come before the legislature this year have gone through very hard waters, and some of them drowned. And so with that in mind, definitely we need to talk about it in new business. Again, let's go to lunch, but let me emphasize the private sectors, task force members, please see Vicki Vaughn for your ticket. And we'll start promptly at 12:20 so that we can get out early. Yes.
Don't forget about bylaws, and I'd like to point out one typo here. Page 3, Article 6, Section 1. Meeting dates, it says mid-May. That's supposed to be mid-July. Oh.
Page 3.
That's
supposed to be here.
But if you think I can see early April and then another meeting in July, it makes sense.
Okay. And the dining is downstairs on the main floor. Is that right, Felipe?
Mm-hmm.
Right, main floor. And
recess.
I walked out of here for a few minutes at 11 o'clock this morning to put some more nickels in my meter and make some telephone calls, and get back at 11:30 and found an empty room. I thought you completed business and left me in the lurch, so to speak. Speaking of those nickels and my automobile, I noticed that I have a somewhat different philosophy on the power of state government. That state seal, he's not worried about it at all. And I'm checking my meter every 2 hours. Okay, the agenda indicates that this will be a follow-up report. I think because of what happened in Moorhead and my being unable to attend there, I think what I'd like to do is back up to January 1st of this year, when the Department of Labor and Industry here in the state of Minnesota started with what we call a training, education, consultation unit. Now that unit interrelates with the migrant problem here, and I'd like to give you a timetable as to what we have done so far. And then upon completion of that, I feel that probably a lack of information about exactly what state OSHA is and what its relationship is to the real world, and if there are questions in that area, rather than making a lengthy presentation on state OSHA, I'd like to clarify any problems that anyone has in that area. As I indicated, the tech unit was formed under the Minnesota State Plan, which we have the federal government. We had a time task framework that we entered into a couple of years ago with them, indicated that 1 January of 75 we would have an operational training, education, and consultation unit, our tech unit. The plan also calls for that unit to be staffed with 3 experienced occupational safety and health investigators. We so staffed it on 1 January. On the man, Don Siebert, representing that tech unit. Don Siebert is with the State Department of Labor and Industry on an IPA agreement. Timetable on January the 8th, Mr. Siebert appeared in the Red River Valley and met with some growers up there. On the 8th, he had a seminar at East Grand Forks. The seminar, incidentally, was set up through coordination with the American Crystal Sugar Company, and they were most helpful in contacting the growers, giving them information about what our presentation would be and what we'd have to say, where it would be, etc. Some 220 growers attended the first seminar in East Grand Forks. Later that day in Drayton, Minnesota, we had a second seminar with 125 growers attended to find out about Minnesota State OSHA. The next day, on the 9th of January in Crookston, we had 270 growers in attendance. January the 10th, a meeting in Moorhead, we had 125 in attendance. A total of 740 growers. I suspect that maybe to find out about OSHA, some of these growers were from across the river. But I think the greater social good was served anyhow. All of these growers, incidentally, I think I indicated, do ship through American Crystal Sugar Company, and that's where we get the leads, and that sent out the notices for us. And, April the 3rd of this year, we had a training session in St. Paul. We asked five of our occupational safety and health investigators from the western portion of the state, with two area offices, one in Brainerd and one in Wilmer, each office. Staffed by four of our investigators. We had a total of five of them in from the two offices in St. Paul. We gave them a training session, which unfortunately was brief, but now with the complexity of the OSHA standards that we're looking at for enforcement on 1 July, a one-day seminar with experienced OSHA is all we felt was necessary. So these five men have had an introductory course, and they will be our first line as far as starting inspections when the date July 1, 75 comes out. July 1, 75, again, is the date that is in the Minnesota State Plan as being our kickoff date for enforcement of OSHA standards in agricultural industry. Perhaps with hindsight, realizing now that migrant labor areas would be the significant problem in Minnesota in agriculture. July 1, which was a date picked some 3 years ago, might not have been the best choice. Of course, beginning of the fiscal year, and I'm sure that's what everyone had in mind, but probably January 1 or April 1 or May 1, more closely corresponding with the growing season, would have been more appropriate. But unfortunately, that's with hindsight. Right now, we're working with a July 1 date. Of April the 14th, we sent a crew to the Renville area. The crew was again my friend Mr. Siebert and two of the OSHI assigned to the tech unit. The Renville area, starting on the standards. Here are the standards, here's what they say. I can only strongly suggest that next time we're out here, it will not be consultants, it will be investigators from the Department of Labor and Industry, and they will be talking in terms of a citation. We had some difficulty the week of April 14th. All of our memories fade fast on this, but the weather, if you recall, that week was not the best. We had problems with mud, snow drifts, and had to use four-wheel vehicles to get into some of these areas. Others, our consultants walked into, and three of the 14 that we had lined up, we were unable to get to at all, not having the use of helicopters or snowmobiles or whatever else would have been necessary. On the 17th, the middle of that same week, there was a meeting in Danube with our staff. We met with 40 growers. We also had with us a man from the Workman's Compensation Division, and there was a seminar there dealing with workman's compensation problems as they relate to migrants, and then the OSHA standards were reviewed for the growers again. Incidentally, as far as those 11 on-site consultations went, the results in the opinion of the consultants was that the housing ranged from excellent to non-existent, including, of course, very poor. Basically, in the Renville area, they found that there are three types of housing. There's the old farmhouse, there's the new structures that are being set up, which is the motel-type unit for multiple multi-family dwellings, and then there are mobile homes that are being used. Order of acceptability is in about the same fashion. The older rebuilt homes are the most suitable and degenerate from there down to the mobile homes. Incidentally, mobile homes with the standards that we're now looking at are going to give us somewhat of a problem with interpretation. Because you could take a new Marshfield home, put it out there, a $10,000 home, and we might still have problems with some of the space requirements. So I think we might have to make some kind of adjustments. Again, we'll have to apply the wait and see doctrine and see how our standards apply in solving the problem. We have some other problems in the Renville area, primarily caused by the fact that beets have not been grown, as I understand it, in the Renville area for 6 or 7 years, or at least have not been grown rather to any extent since that Chaska processing plant burned down about 7 years ago, and the growers there had no place to send, and so they have not been growing. Because of that, you have some migrant housing that was used in the past up to and including 7 years ago, and now is being renovated, or as the case may be, not renovated, but is being planned on planned usage. And we think that that's a problem that's going to bear watching. Also, problem in the Renville area because of the establishment of the new plant out there. Many growers who were never in the sugar beet field are getting into it, and so there's much new construction of migrant housing in that area. And the growers are going to need a lot of advice, help, etc., as they establish their structures. On the 25th of April, we got back out in the Renville area when the weather had cleared a bit and made up on those three on-site, those three labor camps that we had missed earlier. May the 6th through the 8th, we had our St. Peripatetic crew in East Grand Forks. This was more or less a follow-up on the presentation that we had made in January to the 740 growers. We were covering the East Grand Forks, the Crookston, the Drayton, and the Moorhead areas. We met on the 6th of May with 20 field men from the American Crystal system and four of the agricultural managers from American Crystal. There was a half-day training session. This was not just an introductory seminar to OSHA and what it would be as we've had in the past. It was dealing specifically with field men who we think are going to be key men in this system of communicating with the growers. Each of these 20 field men represents approximately 100 growers that have been assigned to him, and we feel if we can work through him, train him as to what OSHA is, what OSHA will be, we're going to have a tremendous ripple effect, and we're going to have to rely on a ripple effect. We can't, we're just not going to reach all these growers, all these labor sites with three consultants. Incidentally, as an aside, when I say three consultants, in the same situation perhaps as the welfare department, we have three men who are responsible for all of our in-house training of our own OSHI, some 40 investigators. They're in charge of and cover the public education field, and they're also available for consultation. Consultation is not just migrant housing, but consultation is Acme Inc. manufacturing plant who wants to know whether or not they have their machines that they are installing come up to OSHA standards, and if not, how are they short? And so we're spreading three men rather thin, but we have been emphasizing, as you can see by the agenda here, we have been emphasizing migrant housing contacts this spring. Okay, we had a half-day training session back to the East Grand Forks meeting with the field men. We had a half-day training session. Then, in company with field men, each of our staff persons went out into the field. We had then three different visiting teams or safaris or whatever you wish to call them. And for the next 2.5 days, with the guidance from the field men, we made on-site consultations and discussed problems with growers. We were able to contact, inspect 80 labor camps in that area in the 2.5 days, which is a little better than twice what we've been able to do since the first of the year because of weather conditions and other conditions. Okay, so where we stand today or where we stand as of the 8th of May is that approximately 100 labor camps in the state of Minnesota have been viewed by our consultant team. Consultant team does not issue citations, does not propose penalties. That part of the game plan will start 1 July of 75. Some other things we've done, maybe perhaps I should indicate that of the 80, I have a written report back from only one of the three investigators. The other two I put the heck around their typewriters today, but of the 31 that he inspected, he found that, again, it ranged from excellent to non-habitable. Six of them he categorized as unfit for labor and so indicated to the grower that the first plan of action would be perhaps to get a bulldozer in there and start by raising it to the ground and go on from there. The preliminary reports and verbal reports from the other two consultants indicates approximately the same ratio or proportion. We've also went to press yesterday with a publication of a Grower's Guide for Voluntary Compliance, wherein we have put together a booklet with several hundred, 100 and a half checkpoints for the grower to conduct a self-inspection. We feel that this is not, of course, going to take the place of having our people visit the labor camps and issue citations or propose penalties, but the coverage, again, working through the associations and American Crystal or anyone else who's willing to work with us in getting word to the growers what the standards are and how he can inspect himself so as to prepare himself for an OSHA inspection. I think that because our agency is not set up as a revenue-raising device, what we're interested in is curing the ills out there. If he can cure them before we, the day before we get there, that's fine with us too. And we hope this is of a benefit to the extent that we think it's going to be once we get our 10,000 copies out in the field distributed. Okay, that takes us through the 8th of May and what the Department of Labor and Industry has done in the migrant field. If there are questions, as I indicated earlier, as to some of the more basic questions, underlying philosophy or otherwise, of our approach and of the OSHA plan, lay on, please. Sir. No, the reports that I get back are almost the contrary of that. There's a sigh of relief that they now see something in print and have somebody explain to them what is to be expected of them. And they claim that for a long time they've been just wallowing around in the bureaucracy and they've been hearing about OSHA and no one could tell them and no one has showed them. And they're happy to see us. And we have, I don't know what you want to term it, a fortunate coincidence or whatever, but OSHA is in the field spring of 75 and we all know what the summer of 74 was in the sugar beet industry, and money doesn't really seem to be the problem up there. It's guidance.
Yeah.
we're not happy with the OSHA regulations which we have presently adopted. These are the old standards that the Federal Labor Department was presumably, and this is under OSHA, not Manpower Services, the Labor Department was presumably enforcing in agricultural areas throughout the United States. As you know, the feds themselves were presumably not satisfied with those standards, so late last summer, early last fall, they proposed some new standards. Those appear to be even worse than the standards that originally existed, right? They held hearings across the United States. How many hearings they've held, I don't know, but it numbers, you know, in the dozens. Again, it's my understanding that they received horrendous negative reaction to their proposed regulations. The regulations have now been taken in-house in Washington, are being considered, redrafted, amendments made on the basis of the public testimony. And what will come out of that, I don't know, and I don't even know when that will come out. But the standards that we are going to be enforcing, just because of this is the first time through for us, it's an area outside of our maybe historical function, et cetera. We have the OSHA standards from last year. They have been incorporated by reference. They are Minnesota state standards now, and that's what we will be enforcing. They are not 100% satisfactory. From July 1 through the end of the growing season, which is going to be a short run this year, hopefully our experience rating and our feedback from the interested community will aid us in developing something better for next round. That's correct. Let me, if I may clarify that, of course, the inspection we're talking about now, you and I both agree, we're talking July 1. Okay. The consultation covers the same audience. We are inspecting any migrant housing. Our problem is identifying it. It's not been a problem as yet. Part of our problem there, and it's a very basic problem. We're occupational safety and health back, and I'm not going to bore you with 20 minutes of philosophy here, but obviously this was generated for the automobile industries, the construction industry, etc. It's a law that the William Steiger law that was passed in 70 by the U.S. Congress was not geared toward migrant housing specifically. Okay, that gives us a bit of a problem. We're making the saddle develop for one horse, we're trying to make it fit another. I think myself it's going to fit, but the pre-occupancy inspection, as that term is used, it can't be done by OSHA personnel. We cannot issue a citation as a result of an inspection in an unoccupied situation. There is no employer-employee relationship, which legally is the whole basis of the OSHA Act. And besides that, many of our standards are drafted in such terms, they assume an occupant. You know, when you're speaking of square footage, or when you're speaking of the frequency of giving treatment to the hygiene facilities, you know, does that apply? Does that mean that the restrooms have to be looked to every 24 hours in February? You know, obviously not. So they assume occupancy. We will be making pre-occupancy consultation visits, which I think, and I hope I'm right on this, will have the same effect when you deal with a man who, and I guess we have to start with the assumption you're dealing with a rational man. You tell him that you're in an unoccupied status right now, or your car is empty, but it cannot be driven without those seat belts on. You're going to have seat belts. You know, I can't issue you a ticket because I didn't see you driving, but darn it, put seat belts on. That's where we are. We can back out, we find occupants, Okay, next. That can be assumed. Yes, that's exactly the same stance we have.
May I ask, what happens to the example? The grass is like, oh, it's just on the foot. What happens to the biggest problem I see when I went to the lock? Right now, it's just what you say. I would like to be locked. It's a question. What's the chance of the problem? Let's say you don't get a chance.
No, I think we're at 100. I'd have to go back and check those standards, but I think we're at 100. If you do not conform to the OSHA standards as promulgated in 74, and or as used and enforced in 74, and I can't tell you, I guess, without reference to the standards themselves. And if indeed that was 100, then yeah, whether you are at 60 or some other figure, you know, no, you're not grandfathered in. Yeah, there's no grandfathering.
So what do you do? You're going to find, you know, $500 and you're trying to violate the lease and then you're going to get your family out there? You're going to call it a law?
No, no. What will be done, and in this instance, you know, the $500 is an absurdity, I guess. Whether or not there'd even be a proposed penalty, I can't tell you in a hypothetical case like this. There'd be a citation issue. The citation may or may not have a proposed penalty, depending upon the, and this gets into administrative discretion, but as to the seriousness of the offense, all right? And then you'd be given an abatement date, okay? And you would have to have that condition abated. Now, if it's serious enough, your abatement date might be, the abatement period might be immediate, or it might be one day, 2 days. If you've got to rebuild a structure, assuming you're dealing with rational people like you've assumed, perhaps you'd have to abate by moving people. If you couldn't move them, they didn't want to move, we might get down to giving you a longer period of time. Rebuild the structure, add a wing, whatever. Put up another building for excess. Let me back up here a couple of steps. The first comment that should be dealt with is find immediately. Okay, now there's an inspection made. The inspector has made his notes. He goes back, fills out a report. He turns it into the St. Paul office. It's reviewed there. Citation will be issued right now. We have a 9-day turnaround time, which is we're low on the totem pole. I mean, we're great as far as the national average goes. No one comes close to that. But 9-day turnaround time, that citation and proposed penalty, if any, will be in the mail. Okay, in a situation as you hypothesize, you're taking the extreme to make your point, which is recognized. But, all right, the child brought in, that technically is going to put you in violation. You're putting me in a position where I sound like I'm not enforcing the laws and the standards of the state of Minnesota, but, pardon? Of course we do. Of course we do. I mean, that the new child is not cramping anyone into an unhealthful position. If you have five adults in a space that four adults should be in, then perhaps you are creating something, all right?
The other thing is that I do very, 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 very operation, we still have cameras, we've done a whole operation,
I don't believe that.
So I don't know if your laws are the same as the one that the Department of Labor is enforcing on us now. If it is, it could put us out of business because we can't put cleanup workers in to take care. And I don't even know what laws.
I would assume that, sure you can. And incidentally, we will be pushing the educational program that we're now pushing in the Renville and East Grand Forks areas. We'll be moving into the vegetable areas of the state as soon as we get the sugar beets taken care of to our satisfaction, that we've done the best we can for this year, and then we'll move south. Okay. Okay. It's not a matter of having forgotten, and there'll be accusations or suggestions made, I'm sure, at the time at the end of this growing season, next October, that we forgot to inspect 90% of the labor camps or 80% of the labor camps in this state. It's not going to be a question of having forgotten. It's a question of we just can't get it all done. We're already stealing from Peter more than a bit. And, we'll get there. I don't know whether people were invited from the Hillsboro area or not. I really can't tell you. Honestly, I can't. And I guess on the basis of what I said, we'll have to assume that they were not. That's how American Crystal gave us the addresses and handled the mailing for the 1,000-some people that were invited. I presume then that would not have covered the Hillsboro area. I can't tell you. In fact, sir, to the question of the standards that you've been operating, laws and standards you've been operating under for the last several years, and, you know, are we now springing something new on you? The laws, the standards for migrant housing that you've had to conform to since 1970 to the OSHA standards of the U.S. Labor Department are the same standards that we are going to be applying this summer, okay? So if you're referring to standards to manpower services that above and beyond us. We did not incorporate we did not incorporate manpower service standards by reference, incorporate them by reference. We adopted the federal OSHA standards, the same standards that you've been living by since 1970. Those are the standards that were, yes, they are. Those are the standards that have now been, all right. No, we are not. No, we're talking about the 1910 standards, 29 CFR 1910 standards of the federal government for employment-related housing that we have incorporated by reference as of a year ago, year and a half ago.
Let me go on record to say for the rest of you people, this is why lots of times employers didn't condemn. Here's a good example of why you don't know what and how you're doing half the time. All of a sudden, you find yourself violating somebody who wasn't violating before. And it's very simple to say, raise a camp. You build a camp that costs you $250,000 on concrete. You set up for a certain number of workers, and they come and say, now that's not right. What do you do? Who's going to pay for that?
Okay, I think what we're talking about, when we're talking about raising a camp, we're not talking about raising concrete buildings. We're talking about buildings that were set up in 1926 when the beet sugars became an item in the Red River Valley and have been used interchangeably for human and stock habitation over the years. And again, I think we're talking about an extreme case that doesn't exist. I don't know to what extent the Manpower Service, and I'll call upon you for expertise in this area, to what extent the Manpower Service standards, A, differ from the OSHA standards, and B, to what extent they've been enforced over the last several years as far as visitations. I suspect you have one of the proposed sets, and I'd also suggest that maybe we're belaboring a detail here that can be solved very readily by cracking the briefcase and taking a look at the standards.
Now, mind you, I'm not objecting to standard housing. I think that housing has been a real problem in the state. I think it's been made. It's been made by companies and try to be all the way to do more housing.
Right, right.
What do you?
We're not in the, and I don't know what the confusion this is going to cause over the summer, but for anyone that has the idea that OSHA is issuing building permits and it cannot be occupied until it's had an OSHA consultation and or inspection is erroneous, or at least that's not in keeping with our philosophy. What we're interested in is going out and inspecting housing that is being used to house migrants, whether or not it meets OSHA standards, and citing it if it doesn't. And if a grower has housing that he's telling the migrants they have to live in the Hilton at their own expense until he gets the Labor Department out there to approve his housing. That's not a problem that we are causing for him or that we're able to solve. We'll look at his housing, not according to his schedule, but according to our schedule. And, you know, it's a put-on as far as the migrants are concerned. Any housing that anyone says is being held up by our department, that is 100% in error. You can use any housing that is available. Hopefully, for the sake of the grower, it conforms. Owner of that house or any agent or representative that he has can request a consultative visit. We have a situation where there is a labor camp and there are no occupants, correct? So we're talking...